Hello, everybody. Welcome to our 10:15 session on the next to last day. How many of you have enjoyed yourself so far in MMS? Is there anyone who didn't raise their hand? Maybe I should have reversed that one, and maybe we could have beat that person, and that would have added some enjoyment to the rest of it for all of us. So how many of you, this is the first time at MMS this year? Good deal. So first caveat here. This is a vendor session, so this will definitely be vendor heavy into the Adaptiva products, which is obviously my employer. So hopefully that's a good thing for y'all, and hopefully that you all knew that one. So don't be fooled when I actually get into the products. So a quick little story. How many of you saw me freaking out here about a half hour ago? Nobody? You did? That's good. So all these labs are running off of my home box, my home server that's sitting in the corner of my living room, and of course, it wasn't available when I walked up to the podium, so I had to call tech support, i.e. my wife, So it's working now, though, so that's a good thing. So we'll cross our fingers and hope that it doesn't decide to die on me again. It's been a good box, so I've been happy with it, but that's okay. So here we go. We'll hop into the first slide here. So basically, what I'm going to talk about is the main things that Adaptiva, and really it's not just Adaptiva, when we talk to clients, when I talk to clients about our solutions in general, we first ask, what are your pain points? What kind of things with Config Manager 2007 and 2012, where do you have the biggest problems? When your managers come to you and ask you to solve these challenges, and you more or less just give them blank stares, right? How do you not get these kind of things done? So that's really what our three pieces of products are focused at. All of these actually have some solutions in Config Manager. So the big three ones on here, Power Management. How many of you have installed R3, 2007 R3? How many of you are using the Power Management that's built in? One hand, so not that there's a huge crowd here. But you know that's kind of indicative of most people's experience. Most people don't realize that exactly what's built into R3 got carried forward to 2012. Actually, it was reverse. What they built for 2012 as far as Power Management, they backported to 2007, and that was what became R3 for Config Manager 2007. So is it a good solution? Yeah, it works. It does all right. But it definitely has some failings. The Wacom LAN that's built into Config Manager 2007, has anyone actually successfully used it without their networking guys getting really mad at them? So, right, it's not that it doesn't work, but it's just not the best way of going about things. The Wacom LAN protocol in and of itself, it just has issues. It wasn't built for an enterprise scale. And so when you're trying to push out this Wacom LAN packet to your WAN, right, the networking guys just don't like those kind of things flying around. Why? Because it opens up to you to security attacks. So that's really one of the first challenges, right? When's the best time to do things in your environment? When the users aren't there. Unfortunately, Config Manager doesn't have a great solution for doing things while the users are actually using their PCs. So the best time to do things is when those PCs aren't there, or when the users aren't there. But then what happens to the PCs? They're hibernated, they're in standby, they're off, right? Because we want to save power. So we got to be able to wake them up. So that's kind of the first half of the power management. But of course, for those users that don't turn it off, we're essentially just wasting power. We're wasting money. So whether you're actually green conscious or not, so green being either money conscious or, you know, actually environmentally friendly, turning those PCs off is going to save your company money, period. There's just no question about it. Study after study, of course, shows that. And it's just intuitive. So if we can actually shut those off without interrupting the user, right? We don't want to shut them off during the day while they're working. We don't want to shut off that PC that's sitting over in the corner that's actually doing other work while the users aren't there. So being able to enforce those power management policies in a smart way without actually interrupting the users. So that's the first product that we'll get into. The next one, broken clients. How many of you actually have a team of people that go around fixing clients because Config Manager's not working on them? At least one hand, most people, right? Maybe that's you, right? It could definitely be you, right? It could be like 25% of your time. Who knows how much time it is? But if your clients are broken, Config Manager's not going to work. And there's that underlying layer that Config Manager depends upon. We're talking about WMI. How many of you have not had WMI issues? Yeah, exactly. So you can blame that on Config Manager, you can blame it on Windows, you can blame it on Apple if you want. But at the end of the day, nobody cares. They just want it to work, right? You just want your deployments to get out there, you want your applications to get out there. And the folks the users that are depending upon those things to get out there. And of course, your management, they don't care about any of those things. They just want those things to work. So fixing those type of issues, WMI being a big one. But of course, there's lots of other things. How many of you have users that are actually local admins still? That's right. That's kind of still scary. I'm sorry for y'all. If we can make sure that those users aren't shooting themselves in the foot, at least, like preventing them from turning off the Config Manager agent, or at least detecting when it's off and restarting it, detecting when the WSUS service is off and restarting it, detecting when the BIT service is off, all of those type of things, then we're going to be able to be proactive, and we're going to be able to prevent those problems from ever happening, and we're going to be very, like I said, proactive, not to say that one again, but make sure that those help desk calls never come in. Right? That's the worst thing that can happen in the world. I've seen studies, and I've heard folks have internal studies that, you know, they have an actual dollar amount for every time the help desk phone rings because it's, you know, some user that's having an issue. And it's not just the time of the help desk technician. They're obviously being paid to do that. It's the user's lost productivity. So if we can fix those things before the user ever has an issue, great. And, of course, if we can expand that model and fix other things in your enterprise. So let's say you're deploying an anti-malware product, right, from whatever vendor that's out there, and you know there's known issues with that. Maybe there's a registry setting that you always have to have there. We want to go check those things. We want to go fix those things. That layer that any application in your environment sits on top of, we want to be able to fix those kind of things. So that's the second huge problem. And the other one, how many are looking forward to 2012 and getting rid of lots of primary sites? Yeah, that's a good thing. So how many of you, this is kind of a little bit off topic, how many of you are planning on having a CAS besides you guys? Okay, how many of you have more than 100,000 clients that just raised their hand? So whoever else that raised their hand and has less than 100,000 clients, you really shouldn't have a CAS. You need to get down to that single primary site. That's just a 2012 thing. But what about all those secondary sites that you have out there? What about all those distribution points? How many of you have BDPs in your environment? The nasty, nasty BDPs. How many of you like BDPs, love BDPs? Yeah, exactly. Maybe I should get a sticker made, I love BDPs, because that's just totally not true. So if we can remove all that infrastructure right off the bat, there's a lot of ROI from that, right? Let's say you have just 20, right, a fairly modest number for most organizations, 20 secondary sites out there. If you just pick a low ball number, $5,000 for 20 secondary sites, that's a good chunk of money right there, right? That's $100,000 just right off the bat that if you didn't have to deploy those secondary sites that you wouldn't have to obviously spend. But now you've got to maintain those things. You've got to purchase software for each of those systems. And, of course, you have to maintain them. You know, in the long run, you've got to go reinstall secondary sites. And, of course, if you have BDPs, you know the pain with those. So if we can get rid of all that infrastructure right off the bat and make it work in exactly the same way that Config Manager does today, then you're that much better off. Easy ROI. So we'll go into that and how we actually one-up what Config Manager does. So, and it's not just about removing all of that remote infrastructure. It's about getting Config Manager to those locations that you don't want to put remote infrastructure at. So, you know, you have that one-off site that maybe it's got 10 people at, maybe it's got 20 people, but they just simply do not have anywhere to put a server. Or they don't have a tech guy, so you're afraid of putting a server out there. Those kind of things. So removing infrastructure and also getting into those locations where you don't want to put infrastructure in. So the first one, if I click the right mouse, there we go, power management. So being able to integrate completely with what Config Manager is doing, being aware of everything that Config Manager does on a day-to-day basis. So all of the different scheduled tasks that are actually there, hardware inventory, software inventory, we can do that. Not such a big deal on those. It really comes into play with software distribution and software updates, right? We want to be aware of when those things are actually happening and being able to wake up those machines. So we actually take a two-pronged approach when we're waking up machines. We do what R3 does. We use the wake-up timers. Why? Because they work, right? We don't have to rely on the network at that point in time. So that's the first thing that we try. But we also do the wake on LAN packet in a peer-to-peer fashion, right? Kind of how wake on LAN was designed. A lot of these older protocols, like PIXI, like wake on LAN, that are kind of industry standard, they make a lot of assumptions about your network, specifically that they can broadcast anywhere, that they can just send traffic anywhere without any security in place. And, of course, people that have tried Wake on LAN figure out real quick that that doesn't normally happen. But if we can bring it down to a peer-to-peer level, where it's actually a peer sending that Wake on LAN packet, that magic packet, now, no big deal, right? We don't have any of that security in place on that local subnet. pretty much in general, most people on a local subnet, it's free-for-all. You can send whatever you want to whatever client you want. And even if it is locked down to a certain extent, you're not blocking these magic packets. You're not blocking Pixie. You're not blocking that. So now we can actually do that peer-to-peer wake-up. So essentially, client agent-based, all of our products are client agent-based. You're installing a client agent on all of your peers, on all of those systems that are out there. And anytime an activity needs to happen, a software distribution, a software update, really, we can, like I said, do the hardware inventory and the software inventory, not as popular, software metering, any of those schedules that you can put into Config Manager. Now, we're going to find a peer client on that network, or on that subnet, and he's going to send out that that wake on LAN packet. We always make sure that we keep one client up on every subnet. Kind of doesn't make sense if we let them all go to sleep or we let them all power off, because then we're not going to actually be able to wake up any of the peers. So it's kind of a last man standing. We make sure that's just always part of it. We're also going to take account of users when we do things. So getting over to the power management side, making sure that we understand what the user's work hours are. So from a power management perspective, we could say, yeah, we want to shut all the machines down or hibernate all the machines at 6 p.m. every night, right? Just because we know that's when most people are gone. But does every person ever leave at 6 p.m.? I mean, do you leave at 6 p.m. every night? Probably not, right? We're all in IT. We all have those wonderful nights where the boss comes down and says, yeah, I need that report by tomorrow morning, right? The wonderful office space boss. So you want to be able to take account of what the users are actually doing. Not only that, we actually want to, you know, once again, not disrupt the user. At the end of the day, if we turn that user's computer off and they're still there, maybe they just went to the bathroom, you're going to hear it. And the users are going to, what's the first thing a lot of users, especially, you know, those folks that think they have a lot of power in your organization, they're going to demand that you turn that off because it interrupted their work. So we want to make sure that we're never going to be doing those kind of things. Because at the end of the day, if we save 10 minutes of power, not such a big deal. We want the big gist of it, right, or the big bulk of power savings out there. Talked about the first one a little bit, and really even the wake-up timers, right? So that's what R3 does. It's an OS feature. It's kind of a self-wake-up type thing. It allows systems to wake up if they're not on your network, so laptops, for instance. This is a little difference that we have from R3, or actually a big difference when we're using the wake-up timers. In R3, the wake-up timers will not wake up laptops. Why? Because there's a hot bag. They call it like the hot bag syndrome, right? Not a good thing. Have you ever had a laptop turn on in a bag? It's not a good thing. It gets really hot really quick. And of course, can be a fire hazard. So we actually have the ability for you to enable that on a collection-by-collection basis. Say, these laptops we know are in the office, or these laptops aren't going to be in a bag. We're going to allow the wake-up timer to actually happen on them. That way, those activities, right, most Config Manager activities are client-side scheduled. So they can actually happen if that system is not on the network. So if we can wake that system up when it's not on the network, and it can still perform those activities, great, we're falling right in with the Config Manager model. And like I said, we're doing the peer-to-peer. We can do the subnet broadcast, like Config Manager does. But again, most security guys, most network guys really loathe that. So very few people actually turn that on. Okay, so on to the demos of Green Planet. So this is actually the first time we're showing this piece of it. So this is Green Planet for 2012. We've had Green Planet. It was actually our first product for Config Manager 2007. And this is the first time we're actually showing it integrated into our workbench. So we have a separate workbench that initially controls all of our activity. For the most part, all of our activity is fire and forget. You're not having to go in here on a continuous basis to do different things. So, you know, it's not a cumbersome workbench. Pretty simple to get around. But at the end of the day, you know, you just come in here, get your work done, and get out of it. So like I said, first time that we're showing the 2012 piece of it. This piece is actually not completely done. So I can't show you everything. For 2007, it works today. But for the 2012 side, because of the integration pieces, it's not completely done. But the UI is done well enough to show you what's going on here. So in our workbench, everything is organized in these things called perspectives, which are just groupings of windows that are organized around a single task. In this case, I went to the Wake on LAN perspective. And I'll get some real estate back here. And this is actually a new feature in 2012. Is that we can actually see all of my deployments over here that I have. So I actually have two deployments. These are application deployments, one for Rich Copy here. And we can actually set, actually I can't show it on there because that's not a deployment, on my package down here. Same thing would come up over there though. We can actually set Wake on LAN settings on a per package or actually a per deployment basis in Config Manager 2012. So let me expand that window. And so that's actually an advertisement to distribute our client agent out to all of our systems. Not really important what the actual package is, but we can actually enable Wake on LAN granularly, like I said, on a per deployment basis. So maybe there's a deployment we don't really care about. We don't want to wake every system up in our environment. Great. We can just set that Wake on LAN on this one specific schedule. And of course, there's lots of other settings once we start enabling things in here. Things like waking up using peer-to-peer. Maybe we don't want to use peer-to-peer for this specific one. Maybe we want to use the subnet-directed broadcasts. Maybe we want to use unicast. So lots of different options depending upon exactly what's going on. And there's the laptop and the non-laptop right now. We're also adding in, it's in the engineering process right now, the ability to do that even more granularly. Because maybe you do have that set of laptops you know is in the executive's bags all the time. We definitely don't want to wake up your CEO's laptop while it's sitting in the bag, right? It's going to get hot, and that might be a resume-generating event, no problem. There will also be a way to set these globally. That is not currently exposed in the UI, so I cannot show you that one. So let's go back out to the home perspective here real quick. Go to the power profile. So once we get the system up, that's a great thing. But at the end of the day, the way this product really justifies itself, and the way that really all, you know, kind of green products justify themselves, is that bill that you get back from the energy company, the power company, at the end of the month. The differential between what you paid this month and what you paid last month, especially when you first install that. So, and that's really all about creating power profiles. So something you can kind of do with group policy if you want. But group policy is pretty agnostic to what's actually going on. Doesn't take into account any user activity. Doesn't take into account, you know, exactly what executables might be running on that system. Maybe you don't want to shut that system down. So we can create, on a per collection basis, different power policies. So we can give things, obviously, a basic name, whatever we want to call it at that point. We're going to use collections. So even though we are using a different workbench at this point in time, we're still Config Manager aware. We know all of the things that are going on in Config Manager. So we can easily drag in all of our collections. So if I want to apply this to all systems, I can just drag that over. We can definitely add multiple collections in there. And of course, we can just collect power metrics if we need to. So there's that checkbox right there to just collect it, right? So that's a good thing when you're starting out with power management, is actually figuring out, hey, this is, you know, where our curve is. So usually it's a bell curve. These are when our systems are actually starting. These are when our systems are actually getting off. So that way you can actually set up all of your different power policies. You can actually see some power savings in here. You can set the work schedule. So there's a global work schedule. On the client side, if you so choose, you can actually, and that doesn't show very well. Let me expand that window. There we go. You can actually set a very granular schedule. And on the client side, if you so choose, you can actually allow users to set their own work schedules, right? That way you're not having a global work schedule. You can actually say, or the users themselves can say, yeah, I normally come in at 7. I don't come in 8 like everyone else. Or if you're in IT, I come in at 6 and leave at 10 or whatever, right? So you can do exactly how you need it to get done. We can also set those, here we go, the before work hours and after work hours, actually what to happen. So we can actually say, you know, these are during the work hours. You know, these are the different types of parameters that we want based upon those hours that the actual user put in. So lots of different customizations. In general, this is all one-time fire and forget type stuff. You're never really having to come back and tweak these kind of things. You're allowing the users to do that. And that's where this user experience tab is. This is all the different things we're going to show to the user, and it's a little green planet icon that actually pops up on the client desktop. If you so choose, you don't have to turn it on. And so now they can actually go in and tweak all of these different settings. Last piece of Green Planet is actually being able to do these things on an ad hoc basis. So actually being able to shut down and start up clients on an ad hoc basis. Not a whole lot specific to show there, but I can now actually go to a collection and say, I want to shut all these machines down. Or maybe I want to wake all these machines up and instantly run a machine policy retrieval evaluation cycle. So those are things that you can absolutely do in there. So pretty much any, just really controlling the power, right? It's really what it comes down to at the end of the day. Making sure that you know the power state, making sure that all those things that depend upon those systems being available, and you have complete control over that through the workbench. So that's Green Planet. Like I said, that's the first time we've actually showed the 2012 piece. And let me hop back over to the PowerPoint. Okay, client health. So the next product, it's actually, if you were looking at the workbench there, it's actually built into the workbench. So all three of our products are actually built on the exact same platform. Same client piece, same server piece. They're going to have one single install for all of those. You're never going to have to worry about installing another client agent or installing another server piece. So we can do multiple types of checks. There are about 40 checks that are built in. Now the nice part about it is the same tool set that we use to build all of our health checks is actually built into the product also. So now you can actually build, you know, that layer, the checks for that layer for any line of business application that you may have in your environment, whatever that may be. In our case, of course, we built all of our health checks around Config Manager. We went out to a select group of close associates, large enterprises, said, what kind of things are giving you issues in your environment when it comes to client health? What kind of things would it be great if you could just automatically fix, click a couple buttons, and automatically fix either reactively or proactively? And so they came back with this list of about 40 things that we designed. In general, like I said, they're all Config Manager-centric type things, but you can easily, of course, extend it. Now we're going to do reactive and proactive. So reactive being, I'm a help desk tech. I went to a machine, they didn't get their software updates, and we know we have WMI issues. We know that users like to turn off the WSUS service, any of those type of things. So I'm just going to be able to click a couple buttons and run that check right then and there on that system and fix all those things. So a great way that this often happens too, right? Most of your checks, when they're going out and troubleshooting machines, maybe when you do this, you have this list of things that you probably check for. You probably, you know, check, are the proxy settings correct? Or we know we had this issue in our environment and we need to go check this registry setting for this line of business application. Those are all things that are essentially informal in most environments. But now we can actually formalize those checks and, of course, standardize those across the board so that now we can run those ad hoc and everyone has access to those. And so we can just make sure that all those things are good. And now I can go on to actual troubleshooting a different type problem, right? If it's a known problem in our environment and I spend time troubleshooting it, it's essentially just lost time at that point. And of course, why wait until the user actually calls though, right? That's the reactive mode. That's the help desk type mode. So why not actually do that proactively? Why not schedule those things out? And so that's really the value of client health. Let's schedule those things before Patch Tuesday comes so that we know that when we deliver all of our updates, all of our machines are actually going to run the updates and the issue isn't going to be with one of those underlying things like WMI. General category, I'll show you all these in the console, which should be right next. But WMI being the highlighted one, that's the one that almost everyone has issues with. So back to our same workbench, and you can see we just have another node in here, client health. And so this one is fully capable on 2012 as well as 2007. And essentially these three nodes right here, the instant client health policy perspective, the instant client health machine policy perspective, and the scheduled client health policy perspective are going to do all of your health checks. So what we're going to do is we're just going to do a single machine right now. We're going to do an instant client health check on a machine. So we'll go ahead and open that. We'll pick one of my machines in my environment, and I honestly have no idea if they're healthy or not, so we'll see exactly what we get. So I don't have a whole lot of machines in this environment, but I can easily pick one. Make sure it's one that I didn't shut down. Pretty sure he's alive. And it's going to create a new policy for me in the middle there. And I'll get some real estate back so we can see this. And now it's just a matter of dragging which health checks that we actually want. So if we want to check all of our services that we can check that we have health checks for, just go ahead and type service in there and drag and drop them over. So I want to check if the Bit service is running. I want to check if my Config Manager agent service is running, and I want to check if my WSUS client service is running. Now, each health check is actually two workflows, two separate workflows. One that actually does the check, let's make sure that things are actually, you know, there and how we want them to be. And the second workflow is the actual remediation. So actually fixing that, right? It's great if we know that something's wrong, but if we can actually fix that, then we're that much better off. So all of them, the remediations aren't enabled automatically. That's essentially just clicking a checkbox. So that's that checkbox on each health check. There are also wonderful health checks like WMI. That's the bane of most administrators' existences. And so if we can actually fix that without actually sending folks out to do that, that's a great thing too. So we can combine all these health checks in any form or fashion that we want to and it's simply just dragging them in, and now we can run these ad hoc. So I'll go ahead and run that. And it's going to hop over to the execution results tab. It's going to package those up. It's going to download those workflows to the actual client. And there it goes. It's going to download those workflows to the actual client, and then it's going to return our results. This is an instant ad hoc health check, so it's going to return our results right here. It's also all stored in the database. So especially when we get to the scheduled reports, you're not going to, of course, see an execution results tab. You're going to need to go to the actual reports to see all that data, to see what the client status is, and to see how healthy all of our individual clients are. So this will come back. We'll come back to it in a second, because the first time you run workflows, it takes a handful of seconds for it to actually download to those clients and actually run there. So the other thing we can do, and I'll switch over to my home perspective, is run the scheduled. So not a whole lot of difference here in this perspective. Very simple. We're going to be able to schedule anything that we want, any of those health checks, to be very proactive about the health and the maintenance of all of our systems. So we'll just call this some nonsensical name. Now, we can do this on a collection basis. So similar to Green Planet, we're very Config Manager aware. Obviously, we're an add-on to Config Manager. So we're going to use schedules. These are all of our own schedules. So I'll run this one now. But we also are going to leverage the collections that are actually in Config Manager. So in this case, I'll run it on all my desktop systems. And now we get exactly the same look and feel on the health checks portion. So we want to check the WMI repository integrity, and we want to automatically remediate. Great. We want to actually go and do some Config Manager type things, like our hardware inventory ping. Great. As the workbench slows down on me and my VMs, there we go. So lots of different checks. Like I said, there's about 40 checks built in, and the entire tool set that we use to build all these health checks is actually included in the product. So now you can build all of your own health checks for whatever line of business applications you have, or any other type of, you know, things that are going wrong in your environment. And now you can be very confident when the CEO walks down the hall and says, are we going to be able to get all our patches out? You're going to be able to say yes. So we'll go ahead and let that one run. And we'll go back to the other perspective and see if the results came back or if my VMs are being weird, which is possible. My tech support's not that good all the time. Don't let her hear that, though. Okay, so there we go. There's the instant results that came back from that other health check. And you can see, we can see exactly what happened. They all passed. Like I said, all my machines are relatively pristine. I don't have normal users running them. So nothing's going to be wrong with those. All the data for the scheduled checks, of course, is going to be in the reports. So we're not going to have to, you know, we're not going to be able to come in here. We're going to have to go to all of our reports. The reports in 2012 are all SSRS reports, so they sit right in our Config Manager 2012 console. So if I go to my reporting, and that's going to take like a minute or so to actually expand, but once it does, actually I got to click on the, well, I guess it's not going to expand on me. They are all built in. Maybe I didn't install my reporting point, which is really bad. I'll do that in a second, but they're all built in SSRS reports that are right there. For 2007, they're ASP reports, of course. So you're going to just be able to go right into the Config Manager console and get all of your reporting done, keeping you out of the workbench for all of that reporting time. So that's client health in a nutshell. So the third product, this is the more in-depth product. This is the product that really starts enabling you to do a lot of different things in your environment, is called OneSight. So OneSight is about removing all of that remote infrastructure out of your environment, all those DPs, all those BDPs, all of those secondary sites, making sure that they're not there. Like I was talking about before, it's instant ROI if you don't have to do that. So for a brand new deployment, if we don't have to actually deploy those things, great, that's easy money that you've saved. For an existing deployment, if you don't have to upgrade those servers from 2003 to 2008, you don't have to buy the new hardware, great, then you're saving money there too. And of course, if you can get rid of servers out of your environment, give them back to the server team, give them back to whoever, that's instant money come back to. So the thing is, though, is of course we have to be able to provide all of that other functionality that Config Manager also provides. So what's a secondary site in most environments? Secondary site is about bandwidth control, right? We've got to be able to get content across any given WAN link in a very friendly manner without interrupting anything else that's going on across the network. And so for that, we actually have a custom protocol. It's called the adaptive protocol. It's where our name comes from. It's dynamic. It's all those words that are essentially on that second bullet right there. We're able to detect on any given WAN link exactly how much bandwidth is available and always use just that amount of bandwidth. So if new traffic comes on that link, then we're going to back off aggressively. We're never going to bump anything. It's always going to be the lowest priority content that's going across any given WAN link. So what that means is you're never going to have any administrative involvement with that. It's completely automatic. Like I said, it's completely passive as far as the administrator goes. So you're going to see 100% utilization when you're pushing out content across your network. No problem, because we're not actually bumping any other traffic that's out there. Latency for all other traffic, quality of service for all other traffic on that link is still going to be exactly what it was. Essentially, we're filling in the peaks and valleys when you look at a WAN traffic report. We've proven this out many, many times in lots of different POCs. The networking guys really scratched their heads over this one, and it really comes down to this proprietary protocol that we built, very custom protocol, from our very talented engineering team. And like I said, at the end of the day, we can't disrupt, you know, what's going on your network. Config Manager traffic, the content traffic that's out there, it's important, right? We got to get it there. We got to get it to all those remote clients that are actually needing that content. But we can't, bump anything else that's out there. Line of business traffic, you know, line of business applications, they're definitely more important than what's going on with Config Manager, at least from a time perspective, right? If you're a bank, you've got to get the users or the account holders' information to the teller in a timely fashion. But if that teller doesn't really need Office 2010 right now, right, they're going to wait till some predetermined time in next week or whenever that's going to be. So is it important that we get content out there? Absolutely. Is it important we get content out there right now? No, not at all. So that's exactly what our protocol does, is it makes sure that you're not having to worry about that. You're not having to get up at night to schedule those kind of things. You're not having to worry about, oh, is my sender throttling at 50% and is that too much for my WAN links? And look, oh, this sender over here needs to have a 30% throttle. You know, it's all micromanaging type pieces. We want to get away from that. We want to get away from actually having to talk to the networking team, right? How many of you like talking to your networking team? Very few people actually do, because it always ends up being a goat rope, if you will. So getting away from that is a great thing. And of course, not adding any burden to the users is a great thing also. So we also want to be very respective of the storage that's out there. So similar to actually using the unused bandwidth, that's what we're talking about when we're doing our bandwidth harvesting, we also want to use the unused storage on all the clients out there. So that's how we store our content, right? That's what distribution points are all about. Storing the content, making it available for the clients. So if we remove the distribution point from the picture, where are we actually going to store the content? Well, the clients that are all sitting out there. It's a peer-to-peer methodology for storing and delivering the content to the actual peers that are out there. So now we can take advantage of all that empty free space that's on every one of your clients in your environment. All right, what's the minimum disk size in most people's enterprises today? 120 gigs, 180 gigs, or 160 gigs, right? It's not small, and how much of that is actually used? 20, 30, 40 gigs at most. So in general, about 33%, right, of your space is actually being used out there. The rest is just sitting there doing absolutely nothing. Definitely not a good thing from a cost perspective. So if we can actually use that storage space to store all of your content and then deliver it smartly to all the peers, now you've really removed a huge cost and a huge burden from the server group and from yourself. Because, you know, it's pretty obvious, if you're not buying it, you're going to save that money. So the last part of it is actually delivering the content to the peers. We can store it on all those peers, but now how do we actually deliver it to all those peers? So we do a very smart thing. We're still using our adaptive protocol, although it's not in that very passive mode. It's in a full-on mode when it's on a local peer subnet. So it's very lightweight, but we don't have a single client in there that stores all the content. We actually distribute that content around to all the peers on a subnet. So now the content can come from any peer on the subnet, and it can go in a fashion such as it's a daisy chain fashion, so that there's not one peer that's giving up content to more than one other peer in that local subnet. And so essentially, we elect one peer every time a piece of content needs to come across the subnet. When we elect that one peer, he goes across the WAN to grab the content. He distributes the content to the next peer. That peer gets it from that peer, and so on down the line, so it's a large daisy chain. We also download content on a byte level, so we're not waiting for the entire package to come down, and we're not waiting for the entire a file to come down. As soon as the first bites come down to that peer that got elected, he's able to give those bites up to the next peer. So essentially, they're all downloading it in a simultaneous fashion. The last thing, of course, remote infrastructure in a lot of folks' enterprises is about pixie booting OSD. You have to put WDS out there. WDS works fairly well. But anytime you put WDS out there, you end up having to deal with things like IP helpers, DHCP scope options, kind of the same thing that we were dealing with the wake on LAN packets. It's just a failing of the pixie protocol in general. So if we can get rid of that WDS server, if we can actually pixie boot on a peer level, then we've obviously gained a lot also. We don't have to worry about, once again, going and talking to the networking team, right? Those dreaded networking guys. And so all of our agents are actually pixie enabled also. And so now we can actually do your full OSD deployment from a local pixie server on each and every subnet in your enterprise. So this is essentially a before picture of a relatively large deployment. It's just kind of a half snapshot. Lots of secondary sites. This is a 2007 deployment. Lots of branch distribution points, all of it equating to lots of headaches. So the picture's pretty clear afterwards. We're eliminating all of that remote infrastructure. In this case, the customer chose to do a central site. That's in their data center. You know, things in your data center are much easier to manage than any of that infrastructure that's out in some remote location. So we'll hop into the demo of one site. And I thought I clicked on that. Okay. We'll go to the home perspective. There we go. So we'll go into the one site piece. Actually, we'll start in the Config Manager console, and we'll create a new application. So how many of you have played with 2012 creating applications yet? A handful, most people have at least seen it. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and create a brand new application here. And we are on PR1. So nothing different, and that's part of the point of this demonstration, is from an administrative perspective, and at the end of the day, from a user perspective, there's absolutely nothing different that needs to happen. You don't have to go into our workbench. I'll show you what happens in our workbench so you can see some of the behind-the-scenes type things, but there's nothing that you actually have to do at the end of the day to get this to work. This is completely transparent to both that administrator and the user. And as my deployment types are actually getting created here, so we'll hop over here to the package perspective, and this is in our, obviously, our workbench. And we can see all of the applications in real time. So that application will pop up, there it is, as it finished in Config Manager. And so at that point in time, we're actually grabbing the content. So if you're familiar with the PCK files, the replication of content in Config Manager 2007, this is kind of an equivalent process. We're actually grabbing the content and now making that content available for the rest of the clients, the peers, for anyone who actually requests that content in our enterprise. You can see it went to a green little flag there, which means that we've actually acquired the content. So we actually store the content in a compressed fashion using PKZIP, so a much tighter compression algorithm than what Config Manager natively does. So that equates to a handful of things. The best one is that it's going to be less data that's going across your network. So in addition to us getting stuff across your network in a very smart manner using the adaptive protocol, we're actually putting less data across your network. So there's a lot of efficiencies and a lot of synergies to be gained from that. So now our content's available. So there's this special hook in Config Manager called the alternate content provider. This is something that the Config Manager team themselves put in to the product. It's nothing that we did. It's no registry hacking or DLL hacking or anything like that that we did. We're able to register ourselves as the alternate content provider so that anytime a client requests content, it'll hand itself off to that alternate content provider to go get that content. So let me go ahead and deploy, now that my application's created, I'll go ahead and deploy this application out to all of my systems. And where's my deploy? So I'm going to make this available to all of my systems in my environment, all desktops, And unfortunately, Config Manager requires content to be on a DP. That's not our requirement. It never actually will come off of a DP, but it is something that you still have to maintain one in your data center. So now my deployment is created. Like I said, the actual details of the deployment, no big deal. It's just a simple application. We have it going out there and deployed to that system. Now, another interesting piece that we can show very quickly here on our client is that we also have a policy efficiency piece in there. And so what this does is essentially turn policy up on its head. We're actually making policy push. Instead of having to wait for our 60-minute interval on our client to refresh its policy, and that's not where I wanted to go, instead of having to wait for that 60-minute interval, we're going to actually tell the client agent on that system, hey, you have a new policy available. Go download it right now. And CM Trace is over here. So based on the time hacks, it'll kick off in hopefully about a minute here. So we're going to actually refresh that policy in real time, so that you're never having to go out and use Roget's tools, you're never having to go out and use the right-click tools to actually force that to happen. It's just going to kick it off. And essentially, turning that on is just a one-click in our console. So let's go and look at that real quick. These are some of those one-time tasks that you have to go into our workbench for. These aren't things that you have to go in here continuously to do. You can just go in here and turn it on and be done with it. So let's go back to the home perspective. And it's called Policy Bandwidth Management. It's just a simple checkbox. Now, if you don't like it all happening across your environment instantly, we can actually load level it. So we can say, hey, all the systems in this collection, we're only going to cause you to have a push policy in a 15-minute interval. So spread it out over 15 minutes, all those systems in that collection. Here I have it just full throttle so that they're going to get it as soon as they can. And as we move back, it hasn't refreshed. It will eventually. There it goes. As I threatened to curse at it, it goes right there. So I didn't do anything. Obviously, that could have been my 60-minute interval, but we could definitely go check all the other clients. This is a push. So in a large environment, our policy engine actually will push out about 3,000 clients per second. So even in the largest environment in the world, this will happen within a couple minutes across the board. So that may be a good thing for you, maybe a bad thing for you, but load leveling it will definitely bring back so it's not a bad thing for you. And now you're never having to worry about, once again, that instant gratification piece. You know these things are actually going to get out there. So the other ramification really is a huge reduction in traffic. When you think about machine policy polling, if you have your default 60-minute interval on, you're pulling your policy once or 24 times a day. If we can reduce that, say, to one time a day, we've just eliminated 23 useless things from every client in our environment. Because how often do policies actually return anything new? Very, very rarely. So in this case, we've eliminated all that. So that's a lot of network traffic that's no longer there, and that's also a lot of traffic that's not hitting our management points anymore. So if we actually go to our software center now that my policy is refreshed, we should have a log parser application that's actually sitting in there. Once again, I haven't done anything in our workbench. I showed you our workbench. I showed you the content popping up in our workbench, but that policy didn't arrive. Where did that policy go? Contents there. Well, when that policy, let me hop into another client and I'll show you that in a second. So when it actually kicks in, when Config Manager actually requests that content, it's actually going to request it from a peer. We're not going to have to go to a distribution point. Let me hop back over to the console here. And I'll show you where the actual content is stored on our server. And this is configurable. You can put it essentially anywhere you want to put it. And that's the wrong directory. So all of our content gets dropped into this content library, similar to where the PCK files themselves get dropped. These are zipped up packages that then get sent from a peer, so a peer actually will grab them from here and then get sent to all of the other clients that are actually requesting the content. They're stored on each and every client that requests the content, And we always make sure that the content is stored on at least 3 clients in every subnet, so that if one laptop happens to walk off, a desktop crashes, or it doesn't pop up like happened here, unfortunately, in the demo, that you can actually have that content available. So you're never having to worry about, you know, resiliency. So how many of you actually put multiple distribution points in any location? Very rarely have I ever seen anyone do that. But now what happens when that distribution point goes down? What happens when that distribution point, you know, has a hardware failure? Anything along those lines? Well, now you've got issues, right? And of course, getting a new distribution point out there is very painful. But in our case, all of our clients are essentially mini distribution points. You can kind of think of them that way. And so they're all going to potentially have that content. And we're going to always make sure at least 3 of them have that content on any given subnet. We're going to replicate that around in a very smart fashion. And you're never going to actually have to worry about that content's availability anymore. So you're gaining resiliency with using this also. You're never having that single point of failure in any single environment. And we'll check over here again. And I must not be good in 2012, which is possible also. So one other thing we can do is actually push content out. So we'll actually do it this way. And maybe my policies in Config Manager are screwed up. So we can actually push content out pre-staging it. So this is a great scenario for pushing out those hot fixes that you know are going to get out there. So we're not just limited to packages and applications. We're doing all of your software updates. We're going to do all of your task sequence data. So making sure that that is all pre-staged once you go and do your peer-to-peer pixie type piece. So we're going to go in here, and we're going to actually push out a package so that it's now available before Config Manager ever has anything to do with it. So I'm going to create a policy to actually push the content out. Not that I can spell test. And we can add schedules, similar to what we did in Green Planet, similar to what we did in Client Health. In this case, I'm just going to do a now. We can pick all of our target collections. Once again, we're going to use all of that, essentially that IP that you already have in Config Manager. Oh, no drag. With more screen real estate, I can drag like I did before. And now we can switch over to the Content tab. So in this case, dragging is very good. So we'll go to Rich Copy, and we want to actually get all of our content for Rich Copy out there. So maybe, you know, once again, in the case of a software update, great to have that content out there before you actually have to deploy that software update. That way, when the security folks actually come down and say, do it, you know the content's out there. You're not going to have to wait for the content to get out there. So I'm just going to go ahead and click Apply, and now that content is going to start flowing out to all my clients. I picked all of my devices, and so instantly that's going to start going out to all of the clients. Did I pick the right collection? Yes, I did. So it's going to start flowing out and being available now whenever that alternate content provider kicks in. And I still don't know where that deployment went. But we'll check on that client, and we should see the content pop up in this folder. So this folder is called the Adaptiva cache folder. It is sitting on the root of every system that has the Adaptiva client on it. And this is our local piece of where the Config Manager content is actually stored. Or really, in this case, yeah, it originated in Config Manager, but it's just a push policy for us to pre-stage the content. So the interesting thing about this Adaptiva cache folder, first, it's hidden, not such a big deal there. But we can actually drop as much content into this folder as we want to, and it will never register as used space on the actual disk drive. And I've got to start that as local admin. And this is going to show us all the space that's actually used on the drive. And the free space. So one of the things that could potentially happen is if we're caching all this data on all of our local clients, we're using space. So that could instantly generate a help desk call, right? Oh my God, there's a virus, there's something that's actually using all the space on my client, right? And we don't want that. At the end of the day, once again, using or causing a help desk call is one of the worst things that we can actually do. So if we find a larger file, such as, we'll go over to the C drive and find the largest file that we can find, not that C drive. We'll go into here. That's not going to find us a big file. Well, we'll just copy this one over and over and over and over again. And we go into here. And at this point, still kind of insignificant. But we'll see these files pop up and will never actually be affecting the amount of drive space that's available to the end user. So essentially heading off that help desk call. Now, at the end of the day, though, we are still using physical drive space. So we're never going to get away from that fact. So we are going to eventually fill up the drive. Well, that's not necessarily a good thing. So we're going to automatically clean up all of the content that we're actually putting out there. Any of the content that someone like me that just dropped into this folder happens to put in there, that's our first candidate. We're just going to clean that up automatically. We're actually a kernel-level driver, so it's going to happen totally transparent to the end user. They're not going to see that we're actually cleaning up content for them to be able to do this. So one more copy, and we'll go back to Space Sniffer, and you'll see lots of files. And we say the free space hasn't changed one bit on that actual drive. I copied that single file enough that we should have easily dented the free space that's there. So we're never going to ever touch that free space that's available. But like I said, we're going to clean ourselves up. So the first thing, cleaning up that content like me that happened to drop in there. But we're also going to clean up all the content that we drop in that cache, right? At the end of the day, that content probably already got used. So it's pretty easy to go ahead and delete that content. But we're going to do it smartly. We're going to say, hey, this piece of content exists on at least 10 other clients in my subnet. So I'm going to go ahead and delete that content first. Then we're going to say this piece of content exists on 9 clients in my subnet. I'm going to go ahead and delete that content first or next. So once we do that, now the content's still available on those 10 other clients, those 9 other clients. So it's no big deal if I do happen to need that content again. I can just go to one of my peers and grab that. So, you know, the user's going to be able to drop those 100 MP3s that they want to drop on their hard drive without us ever affecting them. And we're not adding any administrative overhead. There's nothing you have to run to do this. This is completely automated, and you're going to be able to just drag it or just, you know, essentially fire and forget. There's no configuration. It just works. It's kind of our tagline, too. Simply works. So let's hop back to the console, and we'll look at peer-to-peer Pixie real quick. There we go. So peer-to-peer Pixie, kind of similar to everything else we're doing. There's some one-time setup cost, and you have to go to our workbench to do that. But at the end of the day, it's just a few clicks to actually do that. There's nothing extra to install. It's part of our client agent itself. So you just, you know, put the client agent out there like you would for everything else. Once again, the client agent is unified for all three products. So there's just one deployment and a separate license key for each one of those. You're never having to have pain again when you go out and install any of our extra stuff. And you just simply come in here and hit enable. You need the wake location. So we use a couple of files. It's about 3 megs of the wake. We compress that down. It compresses to about 500K, and we distribute that to all of the clients. That's like the network boot program. And at the end of the day, we're doing exactly what the Pixie service point does. So the Pixie service point is making calls to the database. It's calling a handful of stored procedures. Those exact stored procedures that are out there are the same exact stored procedures that we're calling. So you're going to get identical functionality out of that as you do with our essentially Pixie service Lite. You can call it whatever you want to call it. Our client Pixie server, right? That's really what it comes down to. Now you've eliminated DHCP scope options. You've eliminated IP helpers. You've got none of those issues in your environment anymore because you're actually Pixie booting off of a peer system. You don't have to worry about those going out there. You don't have to worry about, you know, those subnets. You don't, once again, have to worry about talking to the networking guys. You can just get it done. And it's really that easy. All of the Pixie clients or all of your clients in your environment are now Pixie capable. We elect one per subnet. Not a good thing to have multiples on a subnet. So we elect that one per subnet. He actually comes up and starts servicing all the Pixie requests on that subnet. He then hands off the TFTP duties to another peer client. Right? TFTP is actually the biggest piece. It's what's actually delivering the boot image. Most people don't realize that WDS has both of those built in. And most Pixie servers actually do. But we actually separate those out. They're actually two distinct things that we enable so that now we can hand off that boot image, which is a little bit larger, not huge, right? 200 meg at the most typically, not huge, but it's still more than you want that peer to do multiple times. So if we can hand that duty off to multiple peers in a subnet, we do that. We're going to do that very smart thing so that we're never bogging down that peer, right? At the end of the day, once again, generating a help desk call, bad thing. And if we load down a single peer, that's going to be that bad thing. So all of that functionality rolled into this one client agent. So the client health, the green planet, the one site, all completely rolled in, solving those major headache problems that you have in Config Manager. Like I said, the three products, pretty much there. And that is the three products. Definitely welcome questions right now. Please stop by the booth, and we'll give you some more extensive demos. You can ask more in-depth questions, and we'll go through anything else that you want to have to look at. Thank you.